It's time for the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. Sit back, relax, find your favourite campy chair, and join us around the fire. From wherever you're listening around the world, welcome to Australia's favourite board gaming podcast. The Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by addicts, not experts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Board Game Barbecue Podcast, episode 139, I think. I can't believe we got there. And man, have we got a special episode for you guys tonight. I am also joined by Jules. Say hello, Jules.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, mate. And in Sydney, we've got Sarah.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Jules. How's it going?
Hello.
But we have some special guests on the show tonight, all the way from Before You Play. Please say hello to Monique and Naveen.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Sorry, that was really game showy. I was expecting some music and then you run down from the audience and come up on stage. So we're really lucky to have Monique and Naveen joining us this evening, and we're going to be talking to them about their position in the industry and what it's like to be successful content creators and how they got to be where they are today. And then we'll just bounce into our usual segment, Sizzling Games. We might get some mailbags from some of our listeners, and then we'll finish with Swear and Oath. But first came off the rank. Thanks for joining us on the show. I suppose we'll get started by how this all came about for you guys and how you became the success that you are. I mean, when we told our community that you guys were going to be on the show, some of our Patreons, specifically, I think, Bubba and who else was it, Sarah? We had a couple of people that almost spontaneously...
Oh, there was a bunch. Draven, Harry.
Spontaneously combusted when we told them that you guys were going to be on the show. So,
oh, that's really nice. That's really sweet.
Can you tell us a little bit about maybe some of your earlier memories of being involved or playing games and how Before You Play came about?
Yeah. Sure. So we started playing board games. Well, we started playing board games as kids separately. Mm-hmm. But we started really getting into the hobby about 6 years ago when I was graduating from my master's program here in LA and I didn't really have any friends outside of my classmates. So I found over here we have a meetup.com. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far that extends around the world. So it's just basically a website where you can find groups that are centered around a specific topic or mm-hmm. hobby. Mm-hmm. And I just randomly found board games. And I was like, there are people who meet to play board games? And this is exciting.
Yeah,
that's actually how I know Meetup. It's here as well. And that's how I found my group as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That's a really, you know, pre-COVID, obviously, it was a fantastic resource.
I don't even, were you even searching for board games? I don't
know.
Yeah, I think the algorithm just said board games. And then I think something about being from your childhood memories of remembering you played Clue and Monopoly and those kind of games that it just intrigued you, right?
Yeah. And I have a friend who also just kind of introduced us to like Splendor and Dominion before we even like found out about the larger hobby. Dominion mm-hmm. was online, or I think it might still be there, but it's ported online. And so to me, I thought Dominion was just an online game. I didn't realize that it was like an actual big box deck builder or like what it is now. And so, so I just started joining the meetups and I made a lot of friends and we started going to our local conventions and we started teaching games there at our local convention here that happens 3 times a year. And that's really what set the stage for what our channel is today. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Naveen was like, you were like not interested at all.
I was into board games. I also played as a kid, but I was not as gung-ho about like, oh, conventions and doing all this other stuff. And then once I finally got a taste of it, then I, you know, I dove head in. Yep.
Right. Yeah. So he was like, you're going to go for 3 days. Maybe I'll stay for one. And then like the next convention he's teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Kool-Aid was strong.
Exactly. Yes, it was.
So that's how we started getting into board games. And then about 2 years ago now, I started making the YouTube videos. Naveen wasn't in the videos yet. Mm-mm. And to me, it was just an extension to what I was doing at the local conventions. I was teaching Vitala Serta games because those were my favorite, all-time favorite games, really. And I knew how difficult it is, you know, for some people to get them to the table. And so I figured, like, if we can do this at a local convention, we can try to do this, you know, to have a resource for people all around the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's what my original goal was. And then Naveen would help me.
Yeah, I would do like more setup and lighting and mm-hmm. we would do a lot of like, tutorials. So it would be oh, can you move that piece? Oh, you're going a little too fast. Yeah. Can you move it a little slow? And it'd be like, take one, take two. So
tutorials are hard.
The tutorial side of it. Yeah, it was really fiddly. Yeah. So that's when we transitioned into then playthroughs. And then, so that's when I came on board was she needed a playing partner.
He was like, why don't we just play a game on camera? And at the time I thought playthroughs would probably be the worst thing to film because it's a full length game. Like that's really long.
Yeah.
But they're actually much faster than tutorials. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we are now.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that leads into a great question we had. So I think it was around 2019 that Naveen, you came from behind the camera to in front of it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Monique, what advice did you give Naveen for being on camera?
Oh, that's a great question.
You say, stick with me, kid. I'll take you far.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, whenever we film, we always have these like rules that we try to follow that make editing better.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's all about the user experience. Like we want it to feel like whoever's watching is right at the table with us.
Yeah.
Because that's really our goal. And that's really, truly our, like, even when we meet people in real life, like we just want to play games with people and make friends and stuff. So that's really important. But also just being mindful of things that you're doing while we're filming for editing.
Yeah.
Editing is the worst thing.
I was a big offender because Monique is the primary editor. So I was a big offender on some of the no-no things. And so it took about 3 months to really understand the flow. You know, if something simple as like if you're thinking about a move, we don't want the user or not the user, but the audience to essentially just hear me babble about nothing for about 3 minutes. So for editing, it's just like, okay, be quiet. If you need to take a second, just take a second.
Cut it all out.
And then so it just looks so natural that the next move was just the one that was, you know, front of mind for me. So things like that, like little things. We it took us about 3 to 6 months to really figure out how to film properly.
And at the end of the day, we really value the time of whoever's watching. So we really don't want them to have to sit through that horrible silence. So
And it works for both, right? Because then you don't have to take 5 hours to edit it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so if you see like the videos from the very beginning, like 2 years ago, you'll see a stark change in just like our energy levels.
Yeah.
Some of those videos are pretty horrible.
I was definitely nervous on camera, totally like front on. Yeah. That front on camera was like, hi, I'm Naveen. Hello. You know, so, but I think everybody goes through that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I think that was, that's pretty much it for in terms of like how we got into it, in terms of the tips that she gave me.
And we're still learning every day.
Yeah, totally.
Like I'm hoping 2 years from now, we cut out all the pain of what we're going through right now.
Right now, yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And was there a particular game that hooked you guys into playing together? Like was there one that you were like, as a couple, both just loved?
That is a great question.
It might have been Splendor.
I
think Splendor.
It might have been the very first game.
Yeah.
That was introduced to us actually when we were about to leave on a vacation. We're going on a cruise with like two of our best friends. And they were like, well, we have this game. We just want to show it to you really quick. And we played it right before we left. And after that, we're just thinking about it over and over again.
Yeah. Right? A 30 minute game, you know, there's competition. You're being offensive. You're being defensive at the same time. Because you can see what kind of cards people are taking. You can see what kind of gems they have and what they're working towards. So I think that one for us was the number one game that we played a lot together. Yeah.
But since then, we pretty much, if there's ever a game that we kind of find that we enjoy, we'll try to introduce it to the other, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of our style now.
Yeah, because I play a lot of games with my partner and I know if there is a game that I really like, I will, you know, I'm almost nervous like to show him because I'm like, I want him to love it the same way that I do, you know?
I know exactly what you mean because we do have like somewhat different tastes. So.
Somewhat, yeah. But for the most part, we're pretty aligned. I'd say we're about 90% aligned.
Yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's the most competitive out of the two of you? You mentioned competition before.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think it depends on the day.
Yeah. We're both pretty competitive.
In general, you know what? I think it depends on who has been losing
more.
Like
who has a longer losing streak?
Yes.
Because
typically me.
Well, no, our win to lose ratio is actually quite different off camera. For some reason, on camera, I tend to win more.
It's
games,
the same thing.
But
once the lights are on, I fold.
Those nerves again.
The nerves,
it's very different when you're playing on camera, you know, like talking to the camera and all the lights. So
I mean, you're playing open-handed as well and talking through your strategy and things like that. Yeah,
exactly.
But in general, I think if one of us were to be more mad about losing, it would definitely be me.
Totally. Yeah. I get over it quick, but yeah. In the moment, I'm into it, you know?
Yes. We've ended games prematurely, actually.
Oh, really?
It only happened once.
I can't remember what game it was but there was something where Clans of Caledonia. Monique didn't have anything set up.
Yeah, I couldn't handle it.
I had a pretty big leg up on her, and it was pretty clear that this game wasn't going to get much better.
Yeah. Right.
And so we just stopped it early. That was the one time, though. What? No tears.
So of the games, not necessarily that you've covered on the channel recently, but what has been your standout game for this year so far? What has been the most enjoyable, I would say?
Ooh,
that is a good question.
That is a great question.
There is one game that it hasn't been fulfilled yet. It was on Kickstarter. It hasn't been fulfilled. We happened to play it with the designer, David Turksey. And it's called Defense of Procyon 3.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's it. This would be the game for me also.
So it's a very large, like a 2v2 kind of game where you're two players on a team and two players on another team. It's humans versus aliens. You're in space, and there's this whole backstory behind it. And there's one member from each team who's playing a space game.
Yep.
And one member from each team who's playing the planet game. Like they're kind of like the ground forces.
Yeah, so there's like a ground combat going on, and then there is a space combat going on.
Yep.
Each team has one person on each side. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of help your teammate by beaming things up to space. They can drop things down and help you out.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to coordinate everything. And all four players are completely played asymmetric, meaning there's totally different mechanisms for how they all play.
It's like four different games that work well together, but also don't have as heavy as a rules overhead as other asymmetric games.
Right.
Like you can get into it fairly...
Fairly
quick. There's still definitely some rules overhead in that, right? But it's not as bad as like other things. The only thing is it is quite lengthy. Like that was a 4-hour game.
We did play it on online, which obviously adds 30% more gameplay, 40% more. So I'm wondering what it's like, in person. But that game has not been fulfilled yet. I think they're shipping it out now.
Yeah, but I think it is technically a 2021 game. Yeah. It is incredible.
We really enjoyed it.
One of the most immersive experiences I've ever had playing a game. And we played it online. So, that also kind of furthers that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt like Naveen and I really needed to work together to defeat the humans because we were aliens.
We were the aliens, yeah.
And it's just fantastic. Yeah. That was a fantastic design. And I don't know if it really got released, as widely as other games can be. And that's also kind of like a challenge with these asymmetric, longer games with the rules overhead. But that would be my choice. Yeah.
I'm not sure if the Kickstarter was like right around the beginning of COVID. I think it might have really held it back. Yeah.
I think I remember that. Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a fantastic game though. I'd love to play it again.
Yeah, we're looking to give it some coverage in the future because we really feel strongly about it. Mm-hmm. But
that'd be great. I'll watch that.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, that would definitely be the one for me.
How about you all? What is your favorite game of the year so far?
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh.
That's a tough really one. Tough one. One that's been released this year?
Yeah. Or anything else, something that you new to you.
New to you.
We love hearing about other people's favorites as well.
I'm a bit hooked on The Search for Planet X right now.
Solid.
Yeah, I really like it. Even though it's such a quiet experience at the table, it's not interactive at all. It's like this just mind meld. You're just trying to work out and deduce where that planet is. But it's so much fun. It's very addictive. So
we really enjoyed it. Played it recently.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. 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 So that's up there.
I think
I know what Jules will say.
Yeah, I was really racking my brain until I turned around. I've got, of course, Cloud Spire. I've dove in. When I owned it for the first week, I think I clocked up 30 hours of play and did half the solo content. I just went headfirst into it. It was amazing. Love awesome. Cloud Spire.
Is that a chip theory game?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I have not played it, but I'm very interested in it.
I would love to see you guys play that head to head. It would be fantastic. Really? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
We got
to consider
okay,
that.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. That's one that's like that I've always had my eye on, but I haven't had a chance.
They're really nice too, chip theory games.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be
nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all over the place. What about you, Dan? I've been playing a lot of Destinies from Lucky Duck. I really love the story as it sort of unfolds before you, because I'm a sucker for, you know, really, you know, the story is like a tapestry as you start going from place to place. And but I don't want to say too much because we've also got our top tens coming up later in the year, and don't want to divulge too much about our number one. Okay. What I will say is there is probably a game that was not featured in my top 10 last year that is very high up in my top 10 this year. So so that's been a lot of fun. We actually just started recording for our Patreons last week.
You've been a very secret squirrel about it.
we went 100 down to, was it Jules, 76? I think we did.
Yes.
100 down to 76 for our Patreons. Wow. And that was great. Just going back over all the different games in your collection, plus the ones you've played in the last year, and going, actually, yeah, that one is really good. And how do I fit it into where everything originally was? And there's a few new entries in my top 10 this year. Absolutely.
So speaking of some favorite games, one of the things you guys do on your channel is designer series. So you cover all the games of particular designers. Mm-hmm. You've done Vital Lacerda, of course. You've done Pfister.
Yep.
Not necessarily those two, but what has been your favorite designer series you've done so far?
Well, we are currently starting. We actually we're in the process of editing the first video for the Big Box series, but we're doing Uwe Rosenberg.
Nice.
So far, this is probably the most exciting for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that I had not played of his.
Still now. There's still a lot of games that we're going to be covering of the Big Box games that we haven't played. And going into thinking, or like when people were recommending other designers for the series, a lot of them were recommending Uwe Rosenberg. And it wasn't until they were recommending him that I realized, like, I really love his games.
Yeah.
His games are really good.
They are.
So that would be, or the ones that I played. And so that would be a really good one. And we just finished filming and we're editing Agricola right now. And that was, you know, that's one of the most iconic Euro games in our opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
And so just being able to actually play that, we hadn't played it until now.
Right.
Was a really, really cool feeling.
Yeah. Right? And have you all played Agricola?
I love it.
Yeah. No. Okay. So it's
actually a massive blind spot for me.
Oh yeah.
You haven't played it, or you don't like it?
No, I haven't played it. It's just a big blind spot for me.
No. You haven't played it. Okay, yeah.
Sorry, I haven't played it.
Yeah.
So we were the same way. You know, it's been out for 14 years now. It came out in 2007, and not until the lead up of this filming, we had not played it. So we weren't sure if it was going to be, you know, like dated or anything like that. But once we finally played it, we're like, this thing stands the test of time. It is a really fantastic game. It is very tight.
Yeah, it's very tight. It's not, they don't make Euros that way anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah, it's quite mean. Like that stress of not being able to feed your workers is just like that entire game.
Exactly.
You're just stressed about it.
Or you want to do something, but you have to take suboptimal turns in order to go feed instead of, you know, doing the thing you really want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is turning out to be probably my favorite, at least just because I'd be very curious to see how it evolved from that to like a Feast for Odin or a Caverna where you can do everything. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah. How about you? Same.
Okay. So Vital Lacerda, because he's one of our favorite designers.
Yeah.
Probably. But the only thing is those games we were very familiar with, which is, I think, why we started with that as our designer series. So maybe, you know, going back and just playing through those, forcing ourselves to play all those heavy games from a two-player perspective, you know, because to get a Vital Lacerda game to the table, it's like we are doing this. We're setting off this amount of time.
This is the journey.
So to be able to play each one several times, you know, over the course of several months, I think for me, it might be the number one one.
And that's how the designer series is born anyway. It's because we had played a majority up until whatever time that was, however many he had released at the time. And we really wanted to be able to teach them, but we couldn't decide which one to do. So we're like, let's do all of them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, seeing the progression over time, it's like a class on the designer, right? Uh-huh. So, yeah.
And a lot of the games that you do approach or that you do do the playthroughs, they're a bit complex sort of thing. You sort of lean more towards the heavier games. What's your approach to actually learning these games? Because it's not easy. Like, I imagine it would be quite a lot of work to know them so well that you don't make a single mistake, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you do make mistakes and edit them out.
But we make some how do you approach mistakes,
it? Yeah. We do make some mistakes. We really try hard not to make rules mistakes. Those, those are so painful.
Yeah.
But we do make mistakes in the actual gameplay of like, oh, you didn't pay something.
Yeah, like, oh, I forgot to pay.
Yeah,
right.
Make a video.
Like, you didn't pay.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's like, he didn't collect his wood. And it's like, I could have used that wood.
Yeah.
Totally forgot to collect that income, you know.
But for learning these games, I really feel like, the more you do it, the easier it becomes, or the more your brain sort of compartmentalizes rules. And especially if the publisher or whoever makes the rule books made it in a way that you can compartmentalize, it becomes easier over time. In the beginning, because I learn all the games and I teach them to Naveen.
Yeah, she has to read the rule book. That's the best way for her to learn. So even if I was to learn it and try to teach it to her, she still needs to, let me see that rule book kind of thing.
Yeah, we have different ways of learning. He watches videos, I have to read the rule book. And so in the beginning, I used to have to set up the game all the time. I would set it all up and then I would read the rule book and push pieces and kind of see like exactly where things are. And that setup bit is extremely important because that's how you kind of familiarize the different terms.
The components.
Every game has different terms for components. But nowadays I can take a rule book, I study the setup, and then I just read the rules. I read the rules and I refer back to the setup. And after that, I can pretty much regurgitate it. But the thing that's really important for me, at least, before we actually go to film, is teaching it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So actually, our setup really helps. The fact that Naveen can't learn from reading the rule book as easily.
No, not as fast.
It allows me to teach it to him before we actually teach it to the camera.
Nice. And then I'm visual at that point. And
And then he'll try to watch a video afterwards to see if I made any of those mistakes.
Yeah, I'll go. It's weird.
That happens.
Once I've played a game or like been taught a game, then I can go back, read the rule book, and like, super fast. But the first unshrink it, here's the rule book, I really struggle with that for some reason.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's just a different way. People think in different ways, right? So that's all it is. But rule books these days are actually really good. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think they've evolved quite
they're getting
a bit.
Better.
So they
learn
from each other, you know, and they compartmentalize things on paper for you. So it's really good the way they do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember some of the old rule books. Like one of my favorite games is Mage Knight, and then when someone says they're going to buy Mage Knight and learn it now, I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry, like I feel like I want to apologize to them, because it's just so all over the place, you know. It's not like you said, they haven't it's evolved, definitely.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah. I struggle with those rule books that are like paragraph format. They
are
still out there, and those are usually the games we take like the longest time to cover.
Yeah,
and adjust them. Yeah.
So a question I wanted to ask you guys was, obviously the majority of the content you have on your YouTube channel is two player. Is there a game out there you really want to cover but you can't do it at two players?
Ooh,
that is such a good question.
That is a good question.
And I know that I know the answer to that is yes.
Which game is it?
I'm like looking at a shelf right now.
What game would it be?
I mean, we have covered Scythe. It's not ideal at two.
Yeah, not ideal at two,
we
though.
We have covered that. What's a three and up game? You know, I'm dying to cover Witness.
A Witness, yeah.
That's fun.
A very out-of-print game that probably wouldn't even translate well into a video, but that's like one of my favorite games that you can't play at two. You have to play it at four.
I think it's a full. Yeah. It's like a four-player only game.
Yeah, you're basically playing telephone to solve mysteries, right? To solve
mysteries. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, each player has their own sort of booklet, don't they?
Are you familiar with that game?
Yes. Yeah, I love it. It's so good.
Yeah.
Exactly. Each player has their own, their own booklet. And it's always, I don't know, maybe I always get like the most kick out of it when we play. But
it's great.
It's actually very hard, right?
It's very difficult.
It's really hard,
because
it's hilarious.
Like the red dog went to the XYZ, you know, and then it's like somebody else has a piece that has something similar, and then things start to, you know. The translation gets lost, and so that one's really, really fun.
And you're like, you're memorizing this clue, and then as soon as you get to someone's ear, you're like, oh, it's gone.
Like,
it's gone.
Like, there were 38 ducks going north. It's like,
or was it south?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How about you? Do you know of any?
Oh, that's a good one. You actually nailed it.
Maybe
I would say
Euphoria.
Euphoria
would be another one.
Yeah,
that's like a Stonemaier. Okay. Title. We tend to play that only at conventions because that's like a a Euro game of sorts that
it plays up to six players.
But plays best at higher player
plays
counts.
Best at 4, 5, 6. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe Bonanza, like classic Bonanza.
Classic Bonanza.
We played Bonanza the Duel recently. That's a really, really fun card game that requires a lot of politics.
There's a good amount of negotiating in that one. Yeah. So just, you know, if you can negotiate with more than just one person.
Yeah. I know, we kind of cheated there. We chose a lot of titles.
No, that's great.
Yeah. So you guys have had an opportunity to collaborate with a lot of other content creators. The guys from Game Night and Rodney as well. Are there any other content creators out there that you've collaborated or haven't collaborated with that you really admire the stuff that they're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I would love. I mean, we did recently kind of collaborate with John of John Gets Games. We adore him. He's just one of our favorite board game teachers, and we played games with him online, and he's just like a standout guy. Mm-hmm. And or stand up guy, I think that's stand-up a real guy, phrase. Yeah. And we did do a video recently where we did like a board game teaching tips, so he contributed to that. But I would love to like play a game with him at some point.
Yeah, he's from California also, but he's up north, so it's about 6 hours away.
We haven't quite figured out how to do collaborative videos on our channel yet.
Right.
And it's something that it's always kind of like on the back of our minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we wanted to do it, but we're not sure exactly what format or how exactly we could, put something out there like that.
We really love Paula Deming. Mm-hmm. She's also on the Watch It Play team, but we adore her. She's hilarious. There's a lot. Ruel Gaviola. Mm-hmm. Love Ruel. We mention him like every chance we get. Thinker Themer. The ladies of Thinker Themer.
Yeah,
they're in Australia as well. Mm-hmm. They're awesome. Yeah, gosh. I would love to collaborate with them. I feel like the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
There's so many great people in this industry. It's amazing.
Yeah. It was kind of an unfair question,
like
really.
In that way. Mm-hmm. They could have gone anywhere else, but they're in board games, right?
So. Yeah.
Well, speaking about, the future, obviously you now sort of in tandem with the Watch It Play team, where do you want to take this in the next 5 years? Where do you want to be?
Where do you want to be?
Me? I don't know. I don't know. We pretty much have a calendar where we look ahead at only about 2 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah, okay.
I don't know. We just continue doing what we're doing, just improving on the craft. And
I would love to be able to do it. We have day jobs, and it does make it difficult to create content at the speed that we would like to, or just to be able to cover the amount of games that we would like to cover. But so in the future, it would be nice to kind of do this more and less of our day jobs.
Yeah.
I don't know how feasible
like a part-time thing.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, one of us works and the other one doesn't. Yeah. We're figuring it out, clearly.
Yeah.
But but we would definitely love to be able to cover more on our channel and see where and collaborate more with Watch It Play, because we definitely have joined the team and we haven't, the whole team hasn't actually met each other in person.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think we're baby steps.
Yeah.
We're looking 4 months out.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like we can only really plan 2 months in advance and then at that point just kick the can down the road. So, and then all of a sudden we're going to look back and be like, 5 years have passed. So
I think the biggest answer for us is in 5 years, we'd still like to be here.
Yes. Still doing content. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Sure.
Yeah.
Having fun for the next 5 years.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we've got some questions from our Patreons.
Sure.
Draven asked, is there a game that one of you really loves? This is sort of similar to my other question, but is there a game that one of you really loves and the other one does not like it at all?
Yes.
So the game that Monique loves that I do not like, which is funny that you mentioned Game Night because we played it on Game Night. It's Fantasy Realms.
Oh yeah.
I am not a fan of it.
It's so fast.
It's fast. It is fast.
It's over quickly.
Torch is quick.
So it's not like a 3-hour journey. So that game, if anybody's not familiar with it, you basically have a deck of cards. All with very different scoring criteria, and a lot of the cards will score more points if you can find other cards that synergize with it. Mm-hmm. And then there are cards that do the exact opposite. So if you have the king and queen, you want them together, but maybe there's a jealous princess or something like that, and you want them to nullify the card. So you're constantly trying to get rid of certain cards and acquire certain cards so that at the end you can reveal and essentially have the most points. Yeah, for some reason, it's just not an exciting mechanism for me and what's going on in the game. But like you guys said, it is it's short. Quick. Yeah,
it's Red Rising was modeled after that.
Red Rising was modeled.
Is there any heavy game that I like that you don't?
Heavy game that you like that I don't?
Well, you can, while you think on that.
I'm looking, yeah.
The game that Naveen likes a lot that I'm like, oh, do we keep this game, is Bora Bora.
Oh, Bora Bora,
it's
yeah.
It's a Stefan Feld, right?
Yeah.
Stefan Feld game. And, you know, Stefan Feld is another designer who we contemplate doing a designer series on, but we haven't because I know that there are games like that I wouldn't
quite
be into. But some of his games are quite punishing. They're just, that game as well as Grand Austria Hotel kind of fall under the same category of why I'm not the biggest fan of either. And it's because the actions that you can take are kind of based off of luck.
They're based off the die. Yeah.
They're based off the dice. Like, it's a dice drafting game. And Bora Bora is not.
No, Bora Bora is not. No.
No, but Grand Austria Hotel is. And it's like you roll the dice and you have the distribution of dice that allow you to dictate like which actions you can take. But once all of the dice of that action type have been taken, then nobody can take that. There are ways to kind of mitigate that, but like, I just don't feel comfortable with not being able to do this thing because of the die roll.
Right, right. Yeah. And in Bora Bora, your part that you dislike it's the opposite.
You roll your dice.
You roll your dice, but if somebody has played a dice, you have to play a value that's a lower value. So if you rolled a bunch of highs, then all the actions might be taken up, and then you can only really do one efficient action, maybe two.
Oh, it's so punishing. Like if somebody's first turn, they're going to put a one down on this action spot. Now nobody can take it because there's nothing lower than a one on a die, right? Yeah. Oh, just thinking about it.
Yeah, so that's definitely the one, I think, for her.
Yeah. Must be the only game that rolling sixes is bad, right?
I think it's a game where like if you roll a six and you're first to an action spot, then that action is really sweet for you. Yeah. But then after that, it diminishes. It
goes downhill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think those two games. Yeah.
Yeah, those are the two sensitive ones for me.
and Bubba asked about conferences, and you did say that you attend conferences. We don't have very many conferences like board game cons here in Australia. Yeah. So what would your ideal con be like? What would be there? What would you do besides teach games?
Like a hypothetical con?
That
exists. Like,
okay.
Well, if your ideal one exists, then tell us about that.
I think it kind of does, yeah.
But I guess what would make it more ideal is if it were more local. We really love going to Essenceville.
Yeah. Okay,
For reasons that you can't find at like the American conventions or local conventions. And it's because you go there and there are people from all over the world. Mm-hmm.
It's a melting pot.
Yeah. You know, like you sit at a table, demo a game, and you'll have somebody speaking Spanish, somebody speaking Italian, and unfortunately for us, everybody has to learn the game in English.
Yeah.
We don't, everybody else knows English, but we don't know their language.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just like experiencing the game from their perspectives, it's different. It's different from hearing it from other people who live around us.
Yeah.
And then the food there is also fantastic because it's stuff that you can't find here. And all sorts of publishers from all over the world, like the publishers from Asia and from the ones that you just don't get releases of that come here are there as well.
Yeah. So what would make Essen the most ideal is if there was a whole section for open play. That is the one thing about Essen is it is purely like a demo, a game with the publisher, like a small little thing. And then
it's more of a shopping and
trade show than anything.
Yeah. Right.
And so if you were to mock up like an ideal, it would be something like Essen with open play and designated areas, you know, even if it's like that closes by 10 p.m. or something.
Yeah, and events maybe, because they also don't do like panels.
They don't do like panels or any events like that from what I remember. Yeah.
I like listening to other people in the industry, so.
Yeah.
Have you all been to any, I know there's none in Australia really, or there's like local ones?
There's PAX. All local PAX ones. PAX is like video game and board games. That's like the biggest one, right?
Yeah.
And we have BorderCon in Canberra, which is, I'm pretty sure that's just board games.
No, that's CanCon.
Oh,
sorry. I'm thinking of BorderCon in Albury Wodonga as well.
That that's a tiny country.
I'm mixing those two things. But no, nothing that big, really.
For the most part, they're quite small.
Have you been to any of the overseas ones?
No, haven't yet.
Oh, okay.
That's the dream. Well,
hope to one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
That'd be lovely.
Yeah.
Last question, I suppose, and this is a bit of a sidestep from board gaming, but Monique, you have a remarkable voice. Naveen, you're kind of handy on the guitar as well.
Yeah.
But is music something that you guys are still able to pursue these days? Have you been able to find that sort of that balance between board gaming and your other other interests?
That's really interesting that you bring that up, because we did not, we stopped playing essentially. I think we put out a video that had us playing a little bit in the beginning of it. And then essentially after that, we stopped playing.
Yeah.
Because we just got really busy. We, ever since we joined, I think Watch It Play, things just got extremely busy. And recently we were like, we just need something else.
Another outlet. You know?
We, we need something else to layer our lives with. So every night for like the past 2 weeks,
couple weeks,
we've been playing again.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Guitar.
Awesome.
Yeah, we've been playing guitar. We both play on the electric and we both have different goals. And so we both really just been trying to get on it. And we're thinking about including that in our videos again in the future. Because people have been asking as well.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's really nice of you to say. Thank you.
Right now we're practicing some John Mayer songs. We're trying to he's a fantastic guitarist, and so we're trying to model some,
we both
covers.
Have strats. I don't know if anybody's familiar, but we both have Stratocasters, and so we're just like really trying to get in on that.
I think Mitch is the guitarist in our crew.
I think Blackbird was one of my favorites from your channel, and also there's a really little Paramore song that you do as well, and I can't remember what it's called because I think it's like in between songs on their album. But I really like your version of that too.
It's an interlude. Yeah, like...
Yeah, that's right.
It's a lot.
Well, that's been really, really interesting chatting to you guys. And thank you so much for making some time and being able to ask some questions from our community as well. It's going to mean a lot to all of them. Can we convince you just to stick around and talk some sizzling games for a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
All right, well, then we'll move on to our next segment, which is Sizzling Games. And Sarah, how about we throw it over to you first? What's been hitting the table? What is sizzling in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's quite funny because Monique and Naveen, you mentioned two-player Scythe. And that's actually my sizzle for today.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah, Scythe's been mentioned like a fair bit on this channel because it's Steve's you know, favorite game, or it was his favorite game for a long time. And I know I was talking to him about it and he said something that stuck with me. He said, if you haven't played it by now, then there's a reason, right? And it, like, he didn't say it like that. He was just saying, oh, well, maybe, you know, there's a reason you haven't tried this. And that sort of stuck with me. And I was like, why haven't I played this game? You know, it's been around for a long time. And I kept thinking about it in my head, and this is where my mind went. So I feel like Stonemaier games are like the Apple of the board game world. Like, they have fans who are going to buy all their stuff like as soon as it's available, and they really love Stonemaier games. Mm-hmm. And then there seems to be the people who are like the opposite for whatever reason, and they're not huge on them. I don't know. Does that seem fair to you guys?
That seems like the exact thing that I would describe it. Yeah. Diehard fans and diehard non-fans.
And like Apple have fantastic products, and so does Stonemaier Games. Like, they're sort of these aspirational products as well. So I feel like it's a good analogy for that. Yeah. But I'm in neither of these camps. And so I'm pretty sure that the reason I hadn't played it was just that I hadn't got around to it yet. Like, I really think it's as simple as that. So we had like this retreat where all of the nine of us Board Game Barbecue hosts got together to finally meet. That was like April. So that was really fun. And we played Scythe, and it was four of us, right? So I think it was me and you, Jules, Steve, and my partner, Mark. And I immediately liked it. The flow of it, like the fact that you're doing like a small action on your turn, and you basically know what the next few of your turns will be, because you know what you want to do. So you're like, right, I'll do this, you know, I'll gather these resources, and then I'm going to move and upgrade. And then like, you can, they're also like micro actions at the start, especially because you don't really do the bottom actions as much. I really love that. I love how it flows. But with a four-player game, as I'm sure you guys have experienced, it's, you know, there is the board is smaller. You're going to run into people. Mm-hmm. People are going to have those factions that get a bit of an advantage for battling, you know, you're going to, there's going to be more conflict and more interaction. And Mark basically, my partner basically bought this game in the car on the way home from the retreat. Like, oh, wow. That's how much he liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really liked it. And that was great. So we got it. We played it, two player, and it was different. Like, it was totally different. And it wasn't, it just seemed so that we were far away on the board from each other, and that there wasn't too much of an advantage to take those actions to move and keep moving. And because at the start, you know, you can only move, I think at the very start, you can only move two of your units, right, one space each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, until you like get the factory card that lets you move one twice, and you get the mechs which let you move an extra one. So the movement's costly.
Yeah.
So you have to like spend all these actions to move, find the other person, then battle. You have to be ready for the battle. And so it's sort of, we got to this point where we were just like doing our own thing, and we were just like doing our own efficiency puzzle, I guess, and just trying to get resources and build and finish the game that way. And then we bought the modular board set, and that changed the game so dramatically that it, oh, just if you're playing it two player, I just want to appeal to everyone. If you're playing it two player, get the modular board because it really changed it. It really, it made it so much better and more in your face. And we actually, Mitch gave us the two extra factions.
Oh yeah. The invaders from afar.
Yes, the raiders from afar. That's it. And those ones are really good too, because I think so the green sort of Scottish faction, they can put down these little flags and they can travel there easily. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of Japanese faction, they can lay down traps. And so I felt like this movement cost like was worth it. You know, because you could actually do more on the board,
right?
And it was worth moving and worth conflicting. And we've definitely leaned more into the faction abilities because of that, because some factions you'd get and there'd be conflict sort of leaning. Mm-hmm. And then because there wasn't a lot of that, it seemed like you almost were at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I feel like that has balanced that out. And the map's just different every time as well, which makes things interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also like different scoring cards that you add to it just change the game up. So they did, it was not just the board. They actually added a few other things. So if you're playing it two player, I recommend the modular board. It has totally changed it. It's amazing how much it's changed the game for us when we play it with two.
That's cool. Awesome. We actually have the modular
board. We
have
it. We haven't used it yet.
We haven't played it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting to hear.
Have you been able to do a full seven?
No.
We've done it.
That would be intense.
Way to play.
It was great. It was fantastic.
If you can kind of find people who you know will move quickly, like where once you're taking your bottom row action, they start their turn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then it's fantastic because there's nowhere to hide. It's just
everybody's on their starting island, and then once you get off your island, it's like, oh man.
Yeah.
But what's great about that game is it's mostly the threat of violence because you can only have two stars. You know, it's unless you're the black faction, which will then and push. So you know, if you can time it right, you know, you can go and nab two stars by going battle, and winning, and so.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good game.
Yeah.
I want to play it again.
Yeah, I would love to play it with seven, actually.
Seven is great.
It does sound crazy.
Awesome.
It's very good.
So, that's
Thanks,
me.
Sarah. Cool. So that's...
No worries.
That's playing two players, some great advice there. People who've been avoiding it thinking, I don't know whether I can play it. Take Sarah's advice, get the modular boards and have a crack. Monique, what's been hitting the table? Something you want to tell us all about?
Yeah, so we went to a local convention over the weekend, and I was trying to think through all the games that we were playing. There was a game that I introduced to a friend, and so we hadn't played it in years. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's probably, there you go, that's the answer to your question earlier.
A game
that we wouldn't be able to showcase because of player count, and it's called Kalimala. I don't know if you've ever played it before.
No.
The designer is Fabio Lopiano. So if you're familiar with Merv,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
Merv is his most recent design. Kalimala is an older design from like 2018.
2018, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pretty tight Euro. It's a little bit dry, you know, it's all brown and all that. So yeah. It's not too much theme coming out. But the thing that's really interesting is there are like 15 different scoring criteria. And this is actually a really difficult game to explain, but I'm going to try. And there is a grid at the bottom left-hand corner of the board that has a lot of different action spaces. I think there's mm-hmm. like 12 or something,
right.
Or maybe 9. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly how many. And every player has discs. And on your turn, you place a disc in between two action spaces and you get to take the two actions that are followed by arrows that it points to in any order of your choosing. Your discs stay on that grid. And so if Naveen were to go next and he wanted to take the exact same two actions that I took,
yeah, I would just put one on top.
His disc on top of mine, he would take the two actions and then I would get to go again because my disc is below his. Yeah. And so that you kind of do that. And if ever you have to place a fourth disc on top, then the bottom disc goes to the scoring area. And then you score the first of the 15 different criteria that you're going to be scoring for. It's a lot of area control. So mm-hmm. depending on what you're doing, you can do shipping, you can trade goods, you can build the cathedral. Like there's a lot of different things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you do is going to score at some point in the game.
Right.
It's just a matter of
timing
and like who has it at that point.
Right.
And just that dynamic on that grid makes it super interesting. That was a really, really good game.
Yeah, that sounds fun. The most interesting part is that you're taking actions and knowing that this is a key action that another person is going to want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get in there early, you know other players are going to force it to trigger again for you.
Yeah.
So your one disc could really get you three other actions of that same exact action. And you kind of, depending on the flow of the game, you find those little like holes and pockets that you can kind of get your disc in mm-hmm. so that it can trigger multiple times from other people who want to do that same action.
Yeah, the timing is really interesting because people can kind of sneak in with just like one thing and score that criteria and have the majority in it.
Exactly.
Because they're able to sneak in there. Yeah. And everybody also gets one card that is going to score at the end of the game that you keep a secret. So there's another scoring criteria that everybody will have to score for, but you don't know what everybody else has.
Right.
So you're kind of just like watching how people play.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I see Naveen going to this like really irrelevant scoring area here. He must have that card.
I must have the card.
Yeah. So
there's a little bit of metagaming at towards, you know, oh, Monique is collecting a lot of marble. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should start getting in the marble game because maybe she knows something about the end game scoring.
Yeah. We've heard that from people who have played like Merv and stuff, that this is the design that he is kind of like his holy grail, I guess, mm-hmm. or like his best design to date. But we haven't played Merv yet, so we're not quite sure.
Yep.
But Kalimala is fantastic. Yeah, my choice.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So it's Kalimala from 2017. Kalimala. We'll put the link to that in the show notes as well so that people can check it out. Sounds awesome. While we're on our Sizzling Games, it's worth mentioning that on this episode, our Sizzling Games are sponsored by 2D6, and they're also running a competition at the moment through our Facebook community page where they're giving away two copies of Aquatica. So for your chance to win a copy of Aquatica, all you have to do is hit up our Facebook community page and tell us what is your grail game. What's the one game that you can't get your hands on, or what game would make your entire collection complete? In fact, it's worth asking you guys as well. Is there a game out there that maybe is out of print or something that you haven't been able to get your hands on that would make your collection complete?
The collection's
never complete.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's true too.
Right. That's true. It was for the longest time Ginkopolis, but that back in print. And so...
Oh my gosh, he searched high and high.
I searched, when we went to Essen, I found a used copy from somebody who was selling over there.
He went all the way to Europe.
Yeah. That's right, yeah. That's now back in print, so now...
Now it's back in print.
So I think we're good.
For me, there is a game that I am constantly looking for, and it's Micro Macro.
Oh,
okay.
It won a spiel.
Yeah.
And I can't get it anywhere, and I really want my own copy of it so that I can.
We have so many copies in Australia.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's fine.
So you have to come to Australia. When do Europe for Ginkopolis come to Australia?
There's a driveway.
That's funny.
The white micro macro box. It's actually there's another version coming as well.
Oh, yeah, Full House,
which is hitting stores here. Which is, do you know what that's about? It's sort of a similar thing, but they have like parental, because people were playing Micro Macro with their kids, but the theme was a little bit much.
It's murder.
So they've actually got little like parental controls in the game to say, you can, you know, this particular case is not really kid friendly and this one is. And
I see.
Oh, that's great. So it's not like they're removing that stuff. It's like,
it's still there.
These are the PG ones. These are the rated R ones. I see.
Yeah.
You can choose. Yeah, okay. That's great. I like that.
Yeah, because I suppose it leverages off that whole "Where's Wally? Where's Waldo?" thing. It's like, "Mummy, why is this man got a knife in his back?"
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be tough to explain. But...
That's a very clever game.
Hey, Jules, what's sizzling in your neck of the woods this week?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Martin Wallace. Love Brass Birmingham. I've got my copy signed by him because he lives in Australia. Cool. And I recently tried it's not a new game of his, but it's been redone recently, and that's Tinner's Trail. And my goodness, this has just got Martin's DNA all through it. It feels so intertwined, there's interesting mechanisms going on together. So the theme of this game is, I guess you're running a mining corporation, in sort of the Cornish country in Europe and the UK, and it's basically you're trying to earn the most money. It's a Euro game, and the actions are pretty straightforward. You get to get some miners out. You can mine tin and copper in the game, and there's an expansion that adds arsenic, which I haven't tried yet. But what's really cool about this game is it has some interesting ideas. So the action selection is interesting in that some actions have different costs. Everything is in time, and you have a track at the very top, and you choose your action and you move that many spaces forward in time. And it's always the person in last position going first, which is that whole Takedo mechanism. Mm-hmm. So if you're last and take an action, if you're still last, you get to snowball and keep going. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting about this game is there's a whole auction mechanic where you actually have to bid and win the right to mine in certain areas. And all of them except a couple at the start of the game are face down. And when you do an auction, you'll find out how much copper and tin are there. Now, it's quite interesting in that not always are you going into an auction blind. There are mechanics that allow you to play some cards that are a limited resource for you to check and have a peek at, I guess you do some surveying ahead of the auction as to how much resource is there. And in this game, you can definitely have these moments where you are psyching people out, where you've seen it only has like one tin and one copper and four water. Now, I'll get back to why water is not good, but essentially you're having a bidding auction. When someone passes, then, you know, the highest bidder pays out and they get the rights to mine the land there. You flip over the tile, you put the resources there, and you put one of your mining sites on there. So you have these moments where you go into it where everyone might be completely blind, and so no one knows how good that site is. And you'll have moments where someone does know, and they might be sort of trying to bait people into paying a bit more for a dud site, or they know what it's worth and they're really trying to get it cheap. And you get this great bluffing. Bluffing's not something I often see in a Euro game, which is really, really interesting.
That is really interesting.
Now, with the water, is when you go to mine the resources, it costs you a dollar to pull out a pound, I should say, for every resource you want to take out for how much water is there. So you need to try and pump the water out of your mine site. So the more water, the more it costs you, and it's really bad. That's pretty much the essence of the whole game, is you're trying to claim these sites through auctions. You're trying to mine those resources to earn the most amount of money. And there's some machinery that you can buy to pump out the water. There's trains that help, get rid of water. There's conduits you can build that pump things away. There's shipping yards. If you bring those into the coast, you up the amount of resources you can mine in one go. So there's a real efficiency puzzle that's layered over the top with, you know, auction bidding and bluffing at the same time. It's just really, really clever. The actions are really simple. There's next to no words on this board. It's mm-hmm. just icons and you know what it does. One of my favorite actions, it's the I'm in trouble dud action, is to sell Cornish pasties. You just get a pound.
Love
it's,
it.
It's so much fun. I've only played this on Tabletop Simulator once, but it was enough for me to go and pre-order it because it was just so much cool. fun. I think his designs are so, so clever and so easy to grasp, and it's so much fun. Now,
I was about to say it's not out in this in the retail yet, is it?
It's coming. The Kickstarter's been delivering now. Some countries have it. Ours is probably a month or so away. The really clever thing, the other bit of tension, that the last thing I'll mention for this is how you actually get your points. So once everyone spends all of their time or passes, actually that's another good point. Passing is one of the actions. So you can actually pass early before you reach the end of time. And what that does is you get first dibs on being first player next round, but also you have an investment track. So once all the actions are done, you then go to an investment round. You sell all of your resources, collect the money it's worth, and then there's a table where you convert those money into points. Now, at the start of the game, you have the best ratio for money to points.
Oh,
so if you go early spending your money, you're going to get more points, and that diminishes as the rounds progress. But you need money to bid in those auctions for the mining sites and having the money to do other bits and pieces. So it's like, I could just cash in here and get mega points, but then I'm screwed for the next round. So you got this balance you're trying to get right, which I think is really, really clever. Not only that, when you pass and claim first player next round only, it's actually the positions of investment is you get the best points ratio to points to money ratio for being first. So you might want to pass early so you're getting the best ratio as well. Mm. So if you're last, you're going to be going last and you get the worst ratio. But you want to optimize all of your actions and take as many actions as you can. It's just a simple, really clever game. I'm very excited to see what the Arsenic expansion brings. It's another resource and there's other bits and pieces going on. You can send workers off into other regions of the world to do stuff as well. So that's my season game, Tinner's Trail by Martin Wallace.
That sounds really good.
It does sound very Martin Wallace.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the economic part of it. Is that, you said that's a reprint?
Or so Tinner's Trail's an old game and it's been redone recently. I can't quite remember the publisher. Alley Cat Games have just redone it.
Okay.
Yeah, so all new artwork. That's right. Yeah.
Playing it over the weekend and it was the older game, I think.
Oh, you saw somebody
playing it? I really didn't know what to expect. Because there really isn't a whole lot of components to it. It's like a map and then
the old one
So.
The Alley Cat, the new version's very jazzed up, new artwork, bright pieces, screen printed meeples, you know, all that good Kickstarter stuff.
Very cool. We'll have to keep an eye out for that.
We like his designs.
Yeah, they're great.
Thanks, Jules. So that's Tinner's Trail. Now, I'm actually going to bow out of the sizzling games this week because I've hit a bit of a purple patch. I think I've been on two of the last three episodes. And so I've already sizzled Kabuto Sumo and On Tour in the last couple of days, really. So we'll throw it over to you, Naveen, and you can round it out. What's a sizzling game that you want to share with the people?
Sure. So this one is one that I'm a little scared to talk about it because it's completely out of print. It is a game that came out, so I don't want to get anybody excited or anything, but it came out in 2004, I believe, and it's a Rudiger Dorn game, and it's called Goa. And Goa is a true Euro game in which the game is played over 8 rounds, and a round is split up into 2 halves. The beginning half is an auction phase, where everyone's going to be competing for different tiles. And then the second half of a round is where it's kind of multiplayer solitaire, where you go and take your 3 actions. The overall theme of the game is, this is very dry Euro, but it's you are Portuguese spice traders in the Goa region of India.
Yeah, Goa is a place.
Yeah, essentially, the really exciting part of this game is the auctions phase because it's a closed economy. And so you're basically bidding on different plantation tiles that'll come seeded with different types of resources that you'll need when you go into the actions phase, which is the second half of every single round. So the closed economy is interesting in that it's a one-time bid that goes around. So if there's a tile out there, And I'm the one that's the auctioneer of this specific tile. Everybody goes in turn order and gets their and gives us the one bid that they want to bid on this tile if they want it. When I'm the auctioneer and it comes back around to me and I've heard everyone's bid, I could either accept the highest bid and take all their money, meaning now I have more money to then use when it's a tile that I would want to buy, or I can buy it from the bank and siphon money out of the game and I get the tile. Oh. And so there's this constant, at first, you know, everybody knows how much money everybody has, but then as the rounds go on, the money starts to get kind of skewed. So yeah. You're like, I know that Monique does not have any pepper resource. And so yeah. She's going to value this pepper tile. She's going to need this one. So how much can I get out of her? Yeah. How much can I pump this bid so that either she has to pay a lot for it or she'll pay me for it, you know? Dude. So it's a really, really interesting game that there's a lot of interaction in that first half. Mm-hmm. And I like that dichotomy where it's at Euro, where it's a multiplayer solitaire in the second half when you actually take the actions. But then there's so much interaction at the beginning of every round. So you never really feel like, that game is one or the other. Like you get a good amount of that interaction and then, okay, go have at it in the actions round.
Yeah,
so
that game is really crunchy, like really thinky.
It is really thinky. Yes. Yeah,
my brain sweats by the end of it.
the auction phase. Yeah. Yeah. The actions are fairly simple. There's only six actions you can essentially do. You can build ships, which are needed in order to enhance tech, you can plant into your empty plantations. Mm-hmm. Once you've already used those resources, you can gain income, which will then be used in the auction rounds, mm-hmm. which is, that's always once you see somebody gets their income up, you can be like, oh no, now they're going to outbid me, you know?
You essentially have a board,
yeah.
Right? That's divided into columns and each column is a specific type of action. Yeah. And then the further you push the cube down, the better that action becomes.
Right.
So it's a little bit of an engine buildy. Yeah, that part is quite dry.
Yeah, that part is very dry. Yeah, it's just like a texture. Yeah,
yeah,
so.
It's a tech. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. But it's a fantastic game.
Yeah, if you have an opportunity to play Goa, if someone's like, hey, I got this game Goa, it is super out of print. I would highly recommend sitting down at the table. I would only recommend playing it at the full complement 4. It does play 2 to 4, but because of the way the economy works with the money flowing and the auction, I highly recommend a 4-player game of Goa if you could ever play it.
Nice.
That sounds good. That sounds almost like the estates that bidding.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not as mean.
Okay. But there's a mechanism. So I didn't really talk about the mechanism for how the auction gets set up, but there's also a slight could be mean way that the auction is seeded, and
but not quite like
not
the
quite
estate.
Like
you
the
can't
estate.
Go into
so
the negatives like you can.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think I had my most negative. So my lowest score ever in the estate. I think I was like -67 or oh, I don't wow. know. It was more, yeah. It was pretty bad.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's a funny part though of that game.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So that's Goa and also Kalamala. I'll tell you what, you guys have completely lifted the Euro content of our podcast this episode. So thank you very much for that.
Nice.
Before we let you go, can you just share with the community where we can find more about what you guys are working on, any projects, anything that's coming up in the future?
Sure. We are currently working on, like we mentioned earlier, we're working on our Uwe Rosenberg designer series. Mm-hmm. It kind of took a little bit to get us really going on it, but now we're kind of going full force. Mm-hmm. And so you can find that on our main channel, which is youtube.com/beforeyouplay. We also contribute gameplay videos on Watch It Played. And we just wrapped up a 5-part Warhammer tutorial, Age of Sigmar Warhammer series.
Nice.
Paula Deming and I, where we just kind of taught Warhammer, specifically the third edition of Age of Sigmar, through a series of 5 battle plans. Mm-hmm. So that the final video for that just went live. So all of it now it can be found on Watch It Played.
Very nice.
And that's it. I think we're also on Instagram and Twitter if you're interested.
Yep. And we'll put all those links in the show notes as well so people can check out the stuff that you guys are working on. And thank you so much. It's been an absolute privilege having the opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, so nice talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Yeah. And come back anytime.
Awesome.
Thank you all so much. Really appreciate it.
Take care and have a good rest of your
day. I think it's day, right?
Yeah,
day.
Yeah,
day.
It's day.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. The sun is going down right now.
All right, take care.
All right, take care, thank you so much. Cool. Bye.
Bye, folks. Bye.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions for our roast, which are questions from our Patreon and our Discord community. But before we do that, we should quickly check in on our Bracket Battle 2.0. So we are in the thick of it at the moment. We've got Space Base matched up against Lords of Waterdeep. Guys, how do you think this one's going? Have you got a dog in the fight, either of you?
Lords of Waterdeep wasn't a game I put forward, but I do enjoy that game quite a lot. It's a great, I think it's a worker placement game that's kind of like a next step sort of game, you know, like it's not super heavy, but it's got a fair bit of planning and crunch going on. And it's the first game that had like this bring more buildings, more action spaces to the board as you go through the game. So you can actually purchase these buildings that get added to the game. And when people use that space as a worker space, you get a benefit. And so, and you're also adding more worker spaces to the game. And I really like that. It's reminiscent of, it's like City of Big Shoulders.
Oh, okay.
But it did it first. And I like that because every game is different because you're going to bring new action spaces into the game.
I never thought I'd hear Lords of Waterdeep being compared to City of Big
Shoulders. Only in that mechanic. You know I'm about mechanics.
For me, I haven't played Lords of Waterdeep, but I really enjoy Space Base. It's a good, silly, fun time. It's you're chucking dice and praying that the odds are in your favor. It's so easy to teach people this game. So I hope that gets over the line because I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's nice having some fun games, just getting through the bracket and making it and shaking things up a bit. Look, my only knowledge of Space Base is that every time I tell people that we as a family enjoy Machi Koro, everyone goes, oh, you got to try Space Base. So it's been on my radar in that respect, but we've never pulled the trigger and bought it. So I'm sure we'll end up adding it to the collection eventually. But if you've got a favorite Space Base or Lords of Waterdeep, make sure you hit up our socials and vote. Otherwise, it won't make it through to the next round. And also, it's worth mentioning that our Board Game Bracket 2.0 is sponsored by Game Toppers. There's a link in the show notes. There may still be some opportunities to get some Game Toppers after their last Kickstarter campaign, but that's certainly a great way to bling up your dining room table. And they've also got other ways in which you can bling up your current gaming tables with mats and with add-ons and whatnot. So check out Game Toppers if that's what you want to do to get the most out of your gaming tables.
Some of those mats look amazing too. I like the Viking ones. Yeah. So nice.
Yeah. I might also mention, I did briefly mention it while we were talking to Monique and Naveen, but we recently launched we are in the middle of launching a series of Patreon episodes where the team all count down from 100 down to 1. We are still going to do our top 10s at the end of the year, but a few of us decided, and Steve's the enabler here, decided that, hey, why don't we do a top 100? So Jules, Mitch, Mike, myself, and Steve all did a Patreon episode where we did 100 down to 76. We're also going to be doing one down to 50. And I think at that point, we're going to get a few of the other cast members to jump in as well, until eventually we'll get down to our top 10s, which will be available for everyone. And we'll do them as regular episodes at the end of the year. So if you want to hear those, or if you just want to just support the podcast in general, you can do that by going to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue. And of course, a big thank you to all of our Patreons who support and help make this show possible. We really appreciate it. On that note, let's hit up the roast with some questions from our community mailbag. One question from Jonathan, guys. If you could have a game made from any book or film IP, what would it be and what kind of game would it be?
I've got a total weird one, right? Because
I would expect nothing less.
So true. Because yeah, I know people are going to go Marvel and they're going to go this, that, and the other. But one of my favorite movies, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but one of my favorite movies, it's really old now, and it's called Brazil.
Hey, who do you think you're talking to?
have you seen the movie Brazil?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure
I have. So it's basically this trip. Yeah, it is. And it's basically about this like totalitarian government, right, that's like a big brother type thing. There's no game that has that kind of a theme. And, you know, I love like sort of Euros that are sort of leaning towards complex, I guess. I reckon it'd be really cool to have this that is a theme for a game where you're actually sort of trying to get like a resistance movement and break free of this like totalitarian government that's controlling people. And I just think that that would be a really cool game, but
it's like a dystopian kind of Euro game.
Yeah. But like fighting against it, like trying to overcome that.
Right.
You know, like in Anachrony, you're trying to get off the planet or whatever. That's the sort of main goal at the end of the game. And you're trying to gather all of the things and do all of the things you need to do to get your resources and get off the planet. I guess kind of like that, but what you're doing is you're trying to gather the resources and gather the people and try and overthrow this like evil government by the end of the game.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm. I was really struggling for an answer to this question because I was thinking of some. I was thinking of some of my favorite books, like The Lord of the Rings.
They're all done, right? Like Dune.
Yeah, like they've all been done.
That series by Pierce Brown. What was that called? Red Rising. That would make a good
Yeah.
I'm really blanking. Oh, Robinson Crusoe.
Okay.
Like that's been done. And so. But then I had a thought, and it hasn't been done, is The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
I would love a board game based off The Hobbit. Like, maybe it could be a one versus many, like fighting Smaug or, not really a dungeon crawler, but, you know, hidden movement, and you're trying to get the ring from the...
That would be awesome.
Treasure hall.
If you got the ring and suddenly you had a hidden movement, that would be sick.
Yeah, and you're making noise. So I guess you got that clank mechanic. Yeah. You're making noise and Smaug's trying to
find
where you are.
And you're saying someone is playing Smaug and the others are playing the dwarves?
Playing the dwarves. Like, yeah. I should have said you've got the ring. You're trying to find the
Arkenstone. That's it. Yeah, that's right.
That would be a really cool game. I need to write
this. I guess we're going to have to design these games, Jules, ourselves.
Yeah, because that would be an interesting one. Hidden movement, but you actually need to find the thing you're looking for at the same time. Yeah. You don't know where it is. So,
you're trying to hide from the dragon, and the dragon is trying to... The dragon knows where the stone is and is trying to hide that. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
We need to workshop this.
Yeah. So yeah, The Hobbit for me. I love the books. I love the movies.
What about you, Jim?
My mind went, and I don't know how it would. I don't know how this would work, but my mind went to a movie called Sneakers. It's an old movie from the early 90s, I want to say, and it was all about code cracking and breaking into sneakers. They were basically professional. They were paid professionals to break into businesses and things like that, and then they would basically show the business where all their shortcomings were in terms of
security. Cool.
Risk management and stuff. But the movie itself is phenomenal. It's got River Phoenix and oh my god, I've just gone black. There's so many good stars in it. Robert Redford. Who was I going to Sir with Love? It'll come to me.
I haven't seen it, so I can't.
Sydney Poitier. Yeah, this is the old man of the podcast talking. But anyway, some sort of where you're breaking into buildings and cracking codes and cracking safes and sort of avoiding laser beams and all that sort of stuff. I reckon that'd be a lot of fun. I don't know how it would potentially be done. I haven't played Spectre Ops, but maybe Spectre Ops is what I'm describing. I'm not sure. Sort of gives me that vibe when I see it.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was thinking of is some way of the opposite of breaking into buildings, but maybe breaking out of a prison, like a Shawshank or Great Escape style, where you got to avoid the guards and you got to dig tunnels and all that sort of stuff. Something a game that did something like that would be really cool as well.
I know they had that Prison Architect game, but it was a bit controversial, wasn't it? I don't.
Was that based on the PC game though?
It was.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure if that's actually you're building it. You're building the prison. It's different.
I think it was both. I think you were building a prison and
Okay.
Now, guys, I've actually went through the archives and I found a couple of questions that came up in an earlier episode that I was on, but you guys weren't. So I'm going to bounce them off you. And they actually came to us from Carl. One of them is, do you gravitate towards games that offer a familiar experience or new experiences and why?
Oh, I'd say for me, I like new experiences. I like trying all different kinds of things. I'll give every game a go for the first time. But then again, I love my high conflict area control stuff. But honestly, like, I'll try anything because there's so many other clever games out there.
I think because I've been playing for a long time now, I think it sort of is a natural thing that happens. You start to want to see like new stuff, like you want to be shown something different. Yeah, so I think I probably would gravitate towards something that sort of seemed a bit more unique. And you know, when I do my reviews on my site, and I kind of it's one of the like criteria I always look at it, like how different is this game or how similar it is.
Yeah.
And like there are games that have and this could be something super small, right? Like this mechanism is they've taken a mechanism that's been done, but they've sort of skewed it a little bit, and that's interesting too. So it doesn't have to be like a huge thing, but I think it's something I'm probably looking for when I play a new game. And when someone says, "Oh, you should try this, it's really unique," I can't help but go, "Oh, okay." sounds like I want to try that.
Yeah, where someone goes, "Oh, there's a new tile laying game, it's just like Azul," and you go, "Oh, well, it's just like Azul."
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me what's new. If it's new and different, then I'll be more interested, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right, another question. What's the last game you played that you can remember feeling like it was a truly unique experience?
I know the one for me.
Go for it, Jill.
It's Cosmic Frog. It's such a unique theme, and the mechanics of the game are so intertwined to what that is. Like, the shards of worlds you're eating actually go into your gullet, and then you have to disgorge them out again. And mechanics just make sense, and it's nothing like anything else. And even the combat, where you can punch people into other dimensions, and your powers keep evolving over the course of the game. It's just great fun. It's so unique. That's the one that comes to mind for me.
For me, it's one that I playtested, and I did talk briefly on it, like the episode we talked about playtesting. I did talk briefly on it already, but I think it's got to be Julian Pombo's new game. Well, it's not a new game. It's a game that's in the pipeline, I guess. It's still being tested. And your workers are actually, they're not even workers, right? But they're these like programs that you, I guess, you plug them into a mainframe. And when everyone has plugged their program into the mainframe, they run. So it's like running code kind of thing. But everyone gets, depending on what kind of program they plugged in there, they all either get certain resources or they get like approval points, because they're like, if it's a support program and they're helping other people to develop their stuff, they get like approval points, which is also kind of another resource in the game. And it's just really clever how it works, because you have to think about what you're giving to other people and what you're taking for yourself. And it, like, the first time I played it, it was absolutely doing my head in, because I couldn't figure it out and I kept doing it wrong. And I'm like, oh no, I didn't want that. I needed resources. I needed like physical material to build the robots. And then I've used the wrong program and other people have got that from me. So it was really cool and definitely sort of required a lot of like forward planning. And you also you have like three of these programs, and the one that you leave over, there's two mainframes on the board, and the one that you leave over is actually going to run your personal desk computer thing. And you actually get things in the game. Awesome. Instead of moving up a tech tree, you actually get these cards in a game that sit onto your playboard. And again, there's like these lines of code that will run, that you can trade your resources or trade your, approval points to do all these different things. And that's going to be different depending on what you grab. So it's really cool. It definitely feels like you're running programs, which I don't think I've ever felt in a game before. Not like that. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
That's great. All right. Last question for you both. And this is, what are some of the moments in games that give you that rush of excitement? There's a couple of examples here. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but what are some gaming moments that give you a rush of excitement?
A rush of excitement. I guess it's like when you're planning something to happen, like an epic turn, and then it comes to that and you're like, I've done it and this is going to be amazing, and you're just about to like show everyone at the table you're your amazing work, and you're just like,
boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, exactly. Beast mode. I don't know. Yeah, something like that. Or when you think you're going to win, that's also exciting. Or even like when you have some information that the other person doesn't know, and then they're doing something and they think they're going to have something awesome happen, and you're like, no, because I've got this and you can't do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that feeling's pretty good when you've got this perfect card or whatever it is. You're just like, oh, it's the exact counter to this. Like, I mean, everyone would expect me to say the moment where I stab someone in the back. I mean, that's fun, but I definitely love those moments where you pull off those God mode combos. It's like, this goes with this and this, and it's perfect. Like, you spend every resource in the game. There's nothing residual left over. It's like, that was just efficiency to the 10th degree. It's like, yeah, those are cool moments.
Yeah. And I think we talked about last time on the show, but for me, it's like when you roll the dice and there's only one number that's going to save you, or you're flipping a card and there's only one card in the deck that you need and it comes over and everyone just loses their mind when it flips, like it's Pandemic, for instance.
I was about to say,
There's any number of cities that are completely going to destroy, and there'll be it'll cause one of those chain reactions that just ends the game, and there's only one city that can not do that, and if you get that one city, then everyone's going to win, and it's like, I don't want to flip it over, you flip it over. I don't want that responsibility of turning the card.
Yeah, it happens in Aeon's End a lot too, where I actually say to Mark, I need you to shuffle the turn order deck because it's too intense. Like, I can't do it. I don't want to be the one that, like, you know, destroys us by turning over the nemesis. Yeah.
Of the six cards that are in that turn order deck, we need it to be in a specific order to win.
Yeah. And
otherwise, we're doomed.
Yeah.
So you shuffle them.
Yeah.
All great answers. All right. Excuse me. And don't forget, if you do want to send any questions in, we do have an email address, which is in the show notes, or you can just hit us up on the Discord and ask questions, and we can get to them during the course of one of our episodes. And thanks very much to Ed Jonathan, who sent that one through as well. And now we'll move on to the last segment, which is Swear an Oath. Okay, Swear an Oath time, sponsored by Advent Games. Thanks very much to Dean and the team for sponsoring us and for helping us out. And don't forget, you can always hit up the website and check out, it's probably one of the most thorough catalogues of games available, new releases, upcoming Kickstarters, it's all there. At Advent Games, so make sure you check it out. Sarah, how's your oath going?
Oh, that's so intense. Sarah. Just don't use my last name as well, then I know I'm really in trouble.
Have you done your homework?
Come up to the class and show everyone.
Seems like I'm delaying now on purpose, but I have done them. I've done my oaths. So they were to finish the My City campaign, finally. And I did that, and we really enjoyed it while we were doing it. Actually, when I say we, I mean me. I enjoyed it. Mark had like this losing streak that went on for like six games or something. So there was
Were you playing this with Zolly as well?
No, I started it with him, and then he bowed out. It's quite like the scoring is quite tough. You can get negative scoring too. You have to cover up like rocks on your board. And as the more rules were added, it was just getting a bit too complex for his liking and too puzzly, and he just wasn't into it. So he dropped out, and it ended up being two player, which is probably not the best way to play, because in a two player game, the person who wins the game gets this massive benefit, and the person who loses, there is like some catch-ups, but they were so weak that it just felt like with every game that I won, the gap between us was just, you know, like becoming a ravine, and he had no way of catching up to the, you know, the amount of little ticks that I was getting. So I did feel a bit bad for Mark that it was like that. So I think, it definitely would be better with more people. So we probably won't keep playing it, I think, because after the campaign, it goes back to like how it was at game 3, which is quite simple anyway. And Yeah, it's weird. Okay. It doesn't keep all the complexity from the last game. It actually reverts to a simpler game.
That's weird.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit weird too. So I don't think I'll be playing it.
Because I'm used to legacy games. Like when you finish, it's like you've got your own unique copy. And
So is there a reset?
Interesting. There's actually a reset pack. There's actually another side of your player board. So you flip the player board over. And then there's like a little rule sheet that says this is now how you play it. And you don't use any of the stuff you've put on the board and you've built. And so a little bit disappointing, but it was fun playing it, especially for me. So that was my city. The other one was to teach Def War Chest and play that with him. So I just snuck that in because we did it yesterday. We haven't been able to connect really. So there's actually a website. You can play this online. I think you had a go at it too, Jules, right, yesterday?
I did, yeah. I played a game with Def shortly afterwards. It's really great. Good.
Really fun game. So I think the website's just warchestonline.com?
I think so.
Anyway, have a search. You'll find it. And, it's the app is very clean. Like the web app is very clean. Really nice. And, it's a two-player sort of tactical chess-like game.
Skirmish.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Area control. So, yeah. I should do a new one. I feel like this campaign, I think this campaign thing is going really well for me. So I'm actually completing campaigns, which is great. So I think I will continue with that theme and I will swear an oath to finish the initiative campaign. I was waiting to play with my friend that I started it with, but I'm just going to have to play it with her another time because, I really want to get it done and I'm playing it with Mark.
Is there a way you can finish it over Zoom or something with her?
Potentially. I'll have to think about that, but I think it could potentially work with a camera.
Yep.
Yeah, that actually could potentially work.
Yeah,
where were you before?
Hey, I'm the brains guy. I'm the ideas guy. I don't implement anything. I just have good ideas. No, I remember you talking about that on the show. I was interested to see how it goes.
Yeah, it's really fun. I think it's probably, I haven't played Zombie Kids, but I think it's probably at that level. It's not super complex. It's very light, in fact. Very light, but it is fun, and the code cracking and the secrets that are in it are pretty neat.
Yeah, that's the bit that appeals to me. Very cool. All right, I'm gonna go next because I'm still I haven't commenced my previous oath, which was to play and complete, and it's going to be an ongoing one, let's be honest, but Arkham Horror the Dunwich Legacy. I've fully sleeved all my cards for the Dunwich Legacy, which was just fun. I was watching a movie, just sleeving everything. And I've picked my two characters. So I'm going to be playing Zoe Samaras and Ashcan Pete. I chose Ashcan Pete because he's got a dog and I want to take the dog to Duke into the adventure. And it's funny because just selecting my two starter decks for the two characters, just I can see how behind the scenes they've taken the mechanisms of this and applied it to Marvel Champions because they have the different aspects here as well. So there's I'm taking a survivor and a mystic into the game, but they've obviously simplified it and made it more relevant to the Marvel side of things with Marvel Champions. So it's just really, I just sort of picking it apart going, I can see how they've basically taken this game deck sort of thing and then created Marvel Champions out of it. And hopefully that'll actually benefit me, because the first time I played Arkham Horror Living Card Game, I was going in cold, basically. Had played a little bit of Mansions of Madness, but hadn't played any sort of deck builder living card game before, and Connor was my Sherpa through that adventure. So I'm looking forward to having a crack at this. But that's going to be an ongoing one, so I'm going to add something to it. Just a little oath, and that is the expansion to Parks, Nightfall expansion. I'm going to give that a crack. I've had that for a little while now, and Parks being probably one of my favorite games that I've played this year. Jen and I are going to add the Nightfall expansion and have a crack at that.
Nice.
Jules, do you remember what your oath was and how it's going?
Yes. So my last oath was to beat Mission A for Planet 6 and Unsettled. Mm-hmm. I have not managed to do that yet. It is so hard. I'm wondering if it needs to be one of those missions where I need to have a third player.
Okay.
Because I've definitely experienced some games or some missions, I should say, where a higher player count really helps. Yeah. So anyway, I think I can do it. It's just very tough.
That's good though, because I know you were like smashing the other ones. You don't want it to be too easy.
Yeah, some of them were. Yeah, some of them were. They were easy in terms of like I beat it the first time, but I really had to rack my brain to figure out how to do it, which was still a super enjoyable experience. But yeah, this one seems to be really stumping me. But I will add to my oath, but I'm going to do something different because just I don't have a lot of games. Well, I have a lot of games. I don't have many people to play games with in my current situation right now. And I've picked up the paintbrush again recently.
Oh, great.
Because I got some 3D printed towers for Cloudspire and I've finished one of them.
Dude.
Which has been super duper fun. I saw that
on the Discord. It looks amazing.
Nice. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It was really funny. One of the prints completely failed. So my dad sent that to me. Anyway, I was like, why? But it's actually really good as like a test piece. Yeah, so I've just been doing random bits and pieces testing it. So yeah, I finished one of these towers. I'm happy how it looks. So now I've got all the rest are undercoated gray. So I'm going to swear to paint the rest of those by the time I'm on the next podcast.
Is it just the keeps for Cloudspire? Or are there other things you've printed off as well?
No, it's just these keeps. Yep. So there's eight of these. Nice. I've done one. I've got seven.
Did you dry brush those, Jules?
There is some dry brushing. If you're ever interested in painting, guys, come join the Discord.
We chat about it a lot.
And every once in a while. Yeah, we chatted about it a lot. We have a painting and printing channel, and every once in a while this past week, we ran a paint club. So we picked a night, and you can just come, chat, hang out, paint your minis, or just talk about painting, ask for tips and tricks. But there's a bit of dry brushing in here. I did some sort of undertoning, which was the first time I sort of attempted that. So I've got some cool looks on the bricks, which I really enjoy, and some glazing and a few other techniques. So, yeah, really, really happy how that came out.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, no, they look really good. And that's actually really good. That's a really good point too. We should let people know that we do have the paint club in Discord. It's a great place to hang out. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of Super Fantasy Brawl painting in there and had a chat to people. It was really, really calming. Just sit there and just chat.
Yeah, just hang out. You can come and go as you please and just paint some minis or don't. Just ask questions or talk board games. It's just a hangout time and a time for people to schedule to actually pull out the paintbrush, because sometimes the motivation's lacking. But commit yourself and just come hang out.
Yep, 100%. Well, Jules, Sarah, another great episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
For joining me.
Yeah, thank you. And that was awesome.
A massive thanks again to Monique and Naveen. That was a cracking episode.
They were so lovely to talk to.
Yeah, really, really cool. Hope everyone enjoyed it. And we'll talk to you again on the next podcast.
Thanks. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.